Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, where the sky may or may not be falling. It's your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here to tell you if the world is ending or not. Yes, your Marquette Golden Eagles have lost three straight games. Phil, I think it's safe to say we're all still a little scarred from last year. And I guess what we're going to figure out today is if it's happening all over again or if we can calm down a little bit.
Yeah, it's probably somewhere in between.
I think the answer is always generally in the middle.
Yeah,
we're not going to go one extreme.
We are the living embodiment of that curb enthusiasm, Larry Sanders. I think everyone knows what I'm talking about.
That's Larry David. I can't let you call him Larry Sanders, who was a player in the NBA. But yes, the Larry David meme of maybe, I don't know.
To be fair, perfect, I mixed embodiment. Up Bernie Sanders and Larry David.
That is true, and Burn Your Enthusiasm was really one of the best Saturday Night Live skits I have seen in, like, the last 10 years.
Yes, it was.
Did you see that when he did Curb Your Enthusiasm as Bernie Sanders? But we are getting way off topic. I would love to do a whole podcast just talking about Curb Your Enthusiasm or whatever you're watching on television these days.
I hear a summer podcast!
My idea for the summer podcast is like the Marquette multiverse, where we just go through alternate realities of things that may have changed. You know, ooh, like if this didn't happen or if that didn't happen.
Oh boy,
that's my idea for the summer.
That's like Marquette meets Doctor Strange.
I know exactly. It's perfect, but I digress. What we're going to do today is we are going to talk about what the hell happened last week. What the hell is going to happen this week, and where the hell is the program going? That sounds like a solid podcast. But first, Phil, I just want to start with how Payback Week did not end up being Payback Week. It ended up being, oh no, you really are worse than both of these teams week, as Marquette lost to both Creighton and Providence, one infinitely more frustrating than the other. Where do we want to start with what the heck happened last week?
You know, I think we have to start with the Creighton game, because that was... on the home court, theoretically, Marquette should have at least been competitive in that game. And they certainly, in the second half, got the game tied. But that was just fundamentally a game that felt like Marquette was never really in it. Like, Creighton just seemed to control it, Creighton seemed to control it, but by the same token, Marquette, like, just could not hit a shot, right? And it's their home court. Like they just – it was Brick City.
Yeah, and, you know, to be fair, like, not that this makes you feel that much better about the loss, but I think Creighton is one of the hottest teams in America right now. You know, if you look at their schedule, they've got a great chance to win the league, because as we record this on Monday night, Creighton's a game back of Seton Hall. Seton Hall has – Marquette and Villanova still to play, while Creighton still has, I think, Georgetown and St. John's. Then they meet in Omaha for the regular season finale, where they could either be tied or Creighton could be one game back. So Creighton is in great shape to win the Big East, if at least get a share of it. And if, you know, if they win out, and they may be at like a 2 seed, and I don't know if they can get all the way up to a 1, but Creighton is damn good, and that's why I can almost get over. Yeah, I don't think they're getting to a 1, but I mean, they could be a very strong 2. But that's why I could almost get over just getting beaten by Creighton, because they're just superior than Marquette. But still, that's a game you wanted to get on your home court if you wanted to maybe make a push to kind of solidify yourself as a 5 seed, maybe make a push to get even higher than that, a chance for Marcus Howard to make a case for his National Player of the Year race, which we'll maybe touch on that in just a minute. But all that seemed to fade away, because Creighton just kind of asserted, like, they were the better team start to finish in Milwaukee, and, like, what can you do? What was maddening for me is just to be non-competitive against Providence, really. Granted, that's a road game, and Providence has seemingly turned things around after a brutal start, but that doesn't make me feel any better about it. Providence is still a bubble team that has, like, worked its way onto the bubble, largely thanks to Marquette. Their 2 wins over Marquette are 2 of the best things on their resume. But just that whole week, man, just really kind of soured me on the team. It has soured me, soured most of the fan base too. Now I'm not sure I'm ready to go that the collapse is full on, but I'm not ready to totally dismiss that possibility either.
Yeah, well, I mean, one thing to, you know, briefly touch on with regards to Marcus Howard, you know, sneaky player of the year, at least in the Big East, Tayshaun Alexander, right? I mean, like, when was the last time Marcus was held to 0 points in a half in which he played the entire half?
Yeah, I mean, defensively alone, I think he has certainly made himself a strong candidate to be first team all Big East. Is he going to win Big East player of the year? I don't know. I mean, like, if Creighton wins the league, would Zagorowski be your player of the year in the Big East? But Alexander is just such a well-balanced player. I think he's going to get votes. Like, if Creighton wins the league, Creighton may have two first team all Big East players in Zagorowski and Alexander.
Well, I mean, Alexander shut down Miles Powell and Howard, right? And then has been scoring as well. That's the why I bring it up.
Yeah, and if he does shut down Powell again, at least has a 4-game sweep over Howard and Powell. He, you know, that's certainly going to be a feather in his cap. Will Tyshawn Alexander win Big East Player of the Year? I don't know, but he's making a case, and I think he can make a strong closing argument on March 7th, but. No, that is an interesting aside because, you know, if Creighton wins, because I said a few weeks ago when we were talking about Marcus Howard's campaign, but I said, like, if Seton Hall doesn't win the league, those who have been promoting Miles Powell will turn on him and say, well, we've been saying all along that, you know, his team's winning. And if he's winning, then he should be the player. If Seton Hall's winning, he should be the player of the year. But if Seton Hall doesn't win the league, I think everyone who's been promoting Miles Powell might turn on him and look for somebody else. But I don't think they're going to look to Marcus Howard right now. In the presidential races, you know, everyone always says, they never say I'm dropping out. They say I'm suspending my campaign. That's kind of where I am on the Marcus Howard Player of the Year race. Although when you're talking about elections, suspend your campaign means I am totally out. But I think I'm saying suspend my campaign literally is like, I'm just going to suspend it for now. I'm not going to make a case for Marcus Howard for Big East Player of the Year or National Player of the Year right now because I'm not sure I can make – I just don't feel that strongly about it right now. Maybe my attitude will change after if Marquette can win 4 games in a row here. But I think even if Marcus Howard statistically has the numbers for Big East or National Player of the Year to have a compelling case, if Marquette's not ranked, it's hard to – and if the team does totally – fall off, maybe loses 2 more games here, it's going to be tough to make that case for him over, you know, whether it's Luka Garza or Peyton Pritchard or Obi Toppin. Kansas may have 2 National Player of the Year candidates in Dotson and Udoka Azubuike. It's good. I think it's, you know, Marcus Howard as a first-team All-American is not a lock right now if Marquette really struggles down the stretch. But as far as National Player of the Year, I think I'm kind of backing off just a little with I want to keep that little option to jump back in if they finish strong here.
Yeah, I think you're right, actually. I mean, I don't care if statistically or what we see on paper. I mean, this discussion should no way detract from, you know, Marcus Howard as, you know, Marquette scoring phenomenon or, you know, top 10 player in Marquette history, right? Like, he's cemented his status there. But statistically, you could make an argument, but just performatively, both from a team and from an individual player status, I mean, he went for 38 against Providence, and it didn't really matter. Providence still kind of blew Marquette's face off, right?
Yeah, and boy, how many of those points came when the game was totally out of reach?
They were point seeking for Marcus, right? Like, he should have been on the bench with 2 minutes.
Yeah,
to go.
Like, this is honestly, and like, I hate this for Marcus because I really wanted to make a nice case for him for National Player of the Year, but and like, it hurts to say this, but it's like anyone who hates Marcus Howard got everything they wanted to see last week.
Yep.
Like, if you are a Marcus Howard hater, say, well, you know, he doesn't show up in big games. Well, you got a scoreless half against Creighton. If you say, well, he just scores a bunch and it doesn't mean anything because Marquette loses. Well, you got that against Providence, right? And, you know, and he say he turns the ball over too much. Well, he had some turnover issues last week too. So if you're just like nitpicking little things about Marcus Howard, you know, you had a good week last week, and I kind of hate that. I hope he bounces back and has a good last four games here, but you know, it's a thing about optics versus metrics, and you may hate the optics if you're a computer guy and a big stats guy, and you form all the opinions based on what the stats tell you. Maybe there are plenty of stats that suggest Marcus Howard should be the National Player of the Year, but the optics matter, and players on winning teams are going to win this, and you're not Dotson per KenPom is even the National Player of the Year right now, and if Kansas is the number one team in the country, Devon Dotson's going to have a great shot at it. And just again, I don't care about what stats are. I'm going to remember 2020 as the year I found out who Obi Toppin is. And if Dayton ends up getting a one seed, isn't he going to be in the mix for National Player of the Year? I think so. Garza's had a great year in the Big Ten, and Pritchard's had a great year for Oregon. So, these are guys that are going to be in the mix. And we said before, one of the big things missing from Marcus Howard's campaign when we were really making that push for it was the team wasn't ranked. Now the team got ranked, where that's when we made a big push. Well, now they're not ranked, and I don't know if they're going to get ranked again, depending on how these next, four games go. But so, yeah, I'm just... His campaign took a big hit last week. And it's not over, but it took a big hit.
I don't disagree with overall the premise. The one thing, and I guess I'll ask if this influences it you at all. And again, this is Phil being Captain Optimistic. Maybe there's hope somewhere. Whatever. How much stock do you put in? And being there live, I think it was different. I watched the replay of the Creighton game afterwards just to kind of reconfirm. There were a number of times, and I'm new to Synergy, and I haven't figured out if there's a way to do it via Synergy. But there were, especially in that first half, agreed, he put up 0 points. But there were at least 6 or 7 passes that put players in good positions to score that just clanked shots, right? Like, so Marcus may not have been generating points, but he was generating offense that led to good shots that simply did not go in. I mean, my takeaway was if Sakar and Kobe McEwen hit even one more shot, especially 3-point shots from there, with 2 minutes to go, that game's tied.
Yeah,
and they shot well below their percentage, right? And it wasn't like they didn't have open looks. So that's why I'm saying I don't think, and I'm jumping around here a little bit, but I just don't know that, like, Marquette seemingly hasn't been able to put it together. I think what's clear is Marquette is at best the fifth best team in the Big East.
And maybe at best fourth, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean. Could they finish fourth? Absolutely, right? But, I mean, some combination of Seton Hall, Creighton, and Villanova are clearly better than Marquette, right?
Quite clearly.
And then based on how Providence is playing now, and then, Butler, I mean, I don't want to be their fans right now because they were really good for a while and have now lost 3 in a row just like Marquette and, are seemingly struggling as well. So Providence, Marquette, Butler, probably in there somewhere, right? But, I think it's obvious that if Marquette's shots are going in, maybe the most succinct way to put this is Marquette is pure and simple a streaky team.
Yep. Yeah, but with regards to your question about how that, like, I look at Howard, you just can't grade Howard on a curve and not grade everyone else on a curve.
Yep.
It is. I hate this expression, but it is what it is. You are what the numbers say you are. And as much as I would like to make excuses and say, well, he should be better if he had better shooters, well, he doesn't have better shooters. And that's just what he's working with. And we all love Marcus Howard, but the cold, hard fact is you're not getting the National Player of the Year, or maybe not even the Big East Player of the Year, for an A-minus season. You have to have an A-plus season. And maybe Marcus Howard has had an A or A-minus season. He needs an A-plus season if we're going to talk national player of the year. Number one. Like, the player of the year, the best player in college basketball. It has to be an A-plus season. And I can't make the case that it's an A-plus season right now.
Yep.
Just, you know, he may still be first team all. He may still be first team all American. I think he's had a good shot at that. But you know, don't lose three of your next four, because then I think that's out the window too. Maybe even losing two of the next four would cost him a spot on the first team all American squad. Honestly, but we'll kind of see where that is. But
well, and at the end of the day, we have to be realistic that. Team performance, even in these individual awards, especially, you know, basketball, team performance matters in those awards, right? Obi Toppin could be having the same exact season, but if Dayton was, you know, had 12 to 13 losses, he's not getting the same attention.
No, he's not. But yeah, but because he's so damn good, right. They hardly have any losses. Right. But
it's a fair point, right? It's a chicken or the egg thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Howard is what he is, but he's just not his season collective and the teams collectively just have not been good enough to justify consideration for the award.
Yeah. So anyway, I just kind of want to put the National Player of the Year talk on the shelf for now, and who knows, I may bring it back with a vengeance if Marquette gets two wins this week, but I'm going to put it aside for now and really just kind of focus on the team, which is kind of what the big picture discussion I want to get back to, is that, yeah, the team is in a funk, and the question is, and the thing is, yeah, they've lost some games to some really good teams that are forgivable, most of them on the road. It's just those two losses to Providence that really, just really eat at you, and just how poor the team looked, really, honestly, I don't think there was ever a moment in the game on Saturday when I thought they were going to come back and win. Like almost from the jump, I'm like, this is not going well. And I just never felt that game was competitive. And so, again, I get back to what I brought up off the top was, I think we as a fan base are very scarred from last year and the way it ended. Granted, they, you know, those losses towards the end were actually close games. The fact is, they just kept losing them. But now, is it happening all over again? Now, to give you a ray of optimism, Marquette is favored to win each of its last four games, and really should win it. You know, two of them comfortably. I think they have to beat Georgetown this week.
If they
lose to Georgetown this week, I would not want to be in that arena. If I'm Wojo, because boy, that is going to be a nasty scene if they lose to Georgetown on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because I mean, fans were booing them when they had won five of six games. I would not want to be there if he loses four straight, with another one being to a Georgetown team that might only have five healthy, you know, scholarship players. But so if you can get that, maybe you can get a little bit of confidence back. And yeah, then there's going to be the hugely emotional game against Saturday. On Saturday against Seton Hall, we'll see what happens there. And then you got two games against teams that just frankly aren't that good. Yeah, they're road games, and DePaul is a house of, you know, granted the house has changed over the years, but it's still not a place you enjoy going. And then you got at St. John's, and you're kind of hoping those two teams have quit at that point, because neither one of them is going to the tournament, you know, any postseason, much less the NCAA tournament. And so maybe you can kind of catch them just kind of going through the motions and get two wins to close out the season, but there are plenty of reasons to just right the ship, even if it is against lesser competition, but they still count. It's not like there are quad three games coming up. I mean, they'll be nice wins, all four of them, if Marquette could get any combination of, say, two or three wins, hopefully at least three, down the stretch here. So how are you feeling, Phil, as far as this is a total collapse, or it's just a three-game slide and a feeling that maybe they're going to get it back? Where are you on those two extremes?
Yeah, it's hard to say, because it's hard to get, you know, you lose the forest for the trees. And maybe this is a cop-out. I would say if they lose to Georgetown, they very well may lose all the rest. And you know what I mean? Like that Georgetown game is just psychologically so important, especially with Seton Hall the following Saturday for Senior Day. If they don't figure out because they were outclassed in the Providence game, they were theoretically outclassed in the Creighton game, and the fan base isn't getting more forgiving, Right, right. Like, yeah. I would fully expect, justified or not, I fully am prepared for boos when Wojo is introduced as part of that Georgetown game. And
yeah, and I still discourage that, but yes, I'm expecting.
Right, like, and so, like, as a team, like, the psychology of it all, right? Like, everyone knows there was last year's collapse. We've talked ad nauseum about what may or may not have been the cause of that, and that cause may or may not be with the team this year. But, like, that doesn't mean that psychologically the players on this team aren't thinking about that, especially now that they've lost three in a row.
It has to be. It has to be. Like, it has to be in the back of your mind. You know, just like we've seen teams that were supposedly cursed, you know, like the Cubs and Red Sox over the years, when some bad things would happen in a game, it's like, well, here's the curse again. And sometimes it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in those regards. But, you know, back to Marquette, yeah, like a lot of the players on the team now were on the team last year, and they remember what that locker room must have been like and what those practices must have been like when things weren't going well, and no matter how hard they tried, things kept getting worse. And, yes, the psychological blow of losing at home to Georgetown, which really was the nail in the coffin last year. That was the last regular season game. But losing to this undermanned Georgetown team that, yes, is technically fighting for a spot in the tournament. I mean, I think they're kind of on, I'm looking on bracket matrix, they're in the last four out right now, which, by the way, that tells you where the bubble is for those of you who are so far on the ledge that they think Marquette's going to miss the tournament. Marquette is not missing the tournament. Now, if they lose all four and then go out in a 7-10 game in the Big East tournament, it might get interesting. But I just seriously look at the team, the resumes of the teams that are like last four in right now, and look at put that resume next to Marquette. It's just, it's night and day. It's a long way down to there. So like, let's not talk about being on the bubble or missing. Marquette is making the tournament, even if they go in limping. They're going to make the tournament. But yeah, so George, back to what I was saying, Georgetown, maybe they may have like a mindset of like, we're just a few men left standing here, we're going to fight till the end and try to get in this tournament. So they are a bit of a wounded animal in that regard, so maybe that makes you a tiny bit nervous. But other than that, like I said, they've got five healthy scholarship players, I think. You know, I think,
yeah, and other than is that, Yurtsen and they're coming off a loss. Klung, are they both out for Wednesday? Do we know?
I don't know for certain. Let me check their last game against DePaul, which they lost, by the way. So they're coming off a loss to DePaul, and we know what psychologically that does for a team, right? This late in the season. For what it's, Yurtseven did play in the last game. McClung did not.
So, you know, if McClung comes back, he's going to be a little rusty to be sure. But, I mean, that's that Georgetown undermanned, all of that stuff. You know, what's interesting is, with the exception of DePaul, all the bottom, you know, five out of six teams are all coming in. I guess technically Xavier's only lost one, but everybody else is got a losing streak. Marquette's lost three in a row. Butler's lost three in a row. Xavier's lost one. Georgetown's lost two. St. John's has lost two, right? So, like, St. John's, DePaul, Georgetown, certainly Marquette seemingly, Butler a little bit, are all kind of leaking oil here as we come into the end of the season.
Marquette over the last few weeks, looking on bracket matrix, they've fallen from a very strong five seed, like, that was in position to make a push for a four, and they're now a seven seed, between a 6 and a 7 on most brackets out there, but yeah, they're sitting on a 7 right now, and yeah, I still think if they can finish the way I think they can, and that I think winning 3 of the last 4 is a realistic expectation. I think they should still maybe get right back up to that 6 line. But you know, right now they're from trending as a very strong 5, they're now kind of on that 6-7 line. So their stock is falling. There's no doubt about it, but like I said, you couldn't ask for much more as far as an opportunity to right the ship than this wounded Georgetown team at home. In other words, don't lose this game and try to tell me everything's fine, because it totally would not be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, if there's a collapse, I agree. We're making the NCAA tournament. I mean, yeah, we might be very bubblicious if they lost out. But if there is yet another collapse this season, I mean, God, I mean, I'm loath to even say it. But at some point, that's going to matter in consideration when it comes to Wojo, right?
Yeah, and I know you published your article about Wojo on cracksidewalks.com on Monday. And it's a topic that you had actually talked about on the podcast, I want to say a couple weeks ago,
right.
Your grand theory. But yeah, like even his strongest defenders, many of whom are in the decision makers at Marquette, would have to look at back-to-back collapses and say, yikes, bro.
You know? Right.
I love you, Wojo, but you got to start putting something up there that gives us a reason to give you another extension, because last year they kind of kicked the can down the road, right? Because it seemed like before they started losing games that a massive extension was coming.
Correct.
That was kind of the feeling,
yep,
right?
Yep.
That it's like, all right, we've proven everything. He's got this thing rolling. No matter how this season ends, we're probably going to finish at least tied for a Big East title. We're going to bring all these guys back next year. We're going to make a run at a Final Four. Let's give this guy all the money. You know, 5-year extension. And I think most of us would have been on board at that time. And then what happened. They kind of kicked the can down the road and said, look, we're just going to do a 2-year extension. Again, that's me speculating, but I think it's pretty safe to assume that's kind of the way it went.
I would agree with that speculation.
Yeah, they say, look, we're just going to do a 2-year extension to help you recruit. And to his credit, he has recruited very well. There's a nice class coming in, and Kareem Manet is seemingly strongly considering joining him. And so that's one reason why he's like the idea of making a move now is not even on the table. So I don't think there will be any movement as far as an extension this offseason. But a year from now, it's going to probably be time to talk extension again. And it's either let's extend him or maybe not. If it's another struggle next year, if the team does not meet expectations, whatever those expectations end up being, I actually have no idea what my expectations are for next year. But if the team falls short again next year, it might be tough to sell another extension.
Right. Well,
it really might.
Yeah, I agree. And the question is, like, if you're Wojo, you got to be a little concerned because, yes, if you get Kareem Manet next season, right, with the rest of that recruiting class, on paper there is a ton of talent there. But again, it's right. A lot of inexperienced talent.
Yep.
And so if this year is the more likely of the 2 years to be successful, if Wojo doesn't turn this around in this season, that is an awful lot of pressure to put on next season on a lot of young players.
And this is probably being overdramatic, but I was kind of tossing it around on Twitter today thinking, if I'm like lowering my expectation for next year, saying, look, even though all the guys coming in are going to be really talented, you're losing the all-time leading scorer in program history. You're losing a great glue guy in Sakar, and you're losing some rebounding in Jace. If my expectation is lowered next year, I'm not sure I am expecting them to make the tournament. And if not that, and even if I do, I'm not sure I'm expecting them to win a game. So I'm wondering if this might be Wojo's last chance to win a tournament game at Marquette this season.
Oh, jeez.
Like,
man, you
like,
are just
you think about it,
these depressing truth bombs during these podcasts, aren't you?
I know. No, look, just like thinking of it that way, is like this might be as talented and experienced a team as he is going to have before it's time to talk contract again.
Yep.
Because like I unless this freshman class coming in next year is just gangbusters and just totally elevates the team the way that James McNeil and Matthews did, like those guys far exceeded expectations even though they were a highly touted recruiting class. But like next year's freshman class has to be really good, right?
Right. Yep.
Otherwise, the team is taking a step back. No matter how hard you coach these guys up or how well you recruit, it's going to be young talent. It's going to be tough. And so, like you said, a year from now, it may be time to talk contract again. And like I said, I'm not sure they're getting a tournament win next year just because I think that they might be too young to do it. And the thing is, you could get some people off your back by, you know, reaching a Sweet 16 this year and say, well, we can rebuild next year, and then hopefully all these young guys come back, and then we might really have something in the 2022 season. But, yeah, so that I kind of wondered about that. Maybe it's being overdramatic, but it may not be 100% false either.
No, that's why I'm calling it a truth bomb, right? It's the right way to think about it. I mean, listen, I wrote an entire article that was, you know, one, I'm not a writer, as if you've read it, you can tell. But two, like, it was about the premise that, hey, Wojo is slowly getting better, right? So I'm to a certain extent, you could certainly identify me as a true believer in Wojo. But having said that, there is still a lot of risk on next season with that young talent. Don't care how good Wojo is as a coach.
Right.
There's a lot of risk there when you're depending on freshmen. And even if – I'm trying to think how to say this, right? Like, if Wojo doesn't win at least one NCAA tournament game this year, if next year has, you know, a good chance of even missing out on the tournament – when you look at 7 years, and I kind of, you know, even with the metrics, like, I pulled together saying Wojo is trending better, he's getting better as a coach. 7 years with no tournament wins, I don't know how you could ever, even the most optimistic, I don't know how you could ever justify it.
By the way, speaking of, if you want to really kick the can down the road a little bit, if Wojo gets to, like, 10 years at Marquette, he could become, like, the program's second all-time winningest coach. Jeez. I hope he has a tournament win by
then.
My
God.
That could happen.
Oh, God. See, this is where I struggle. Well,
wouldn't that be wild to have your second all-time winningest coach with no tournament wins?
I almost feel...
It can't get there,
like,
right?
That is the determining metric. Like, once he's the third winningest coach in program history, and he doesn't have a tournament win, the Board of Trustees has to be like, all right, we got to pull the trigger. We can't let this guy get the second.
The thing is, he could get that tournament win this year,
right,
to be clear.
Yes.
I'm just saying, like I've said before, there are teams much worse than this Marquette team that have won tournament games. Like, and there have been teams worse than this Marquette team that got to the Final Four.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's just getting hot at the right time.
Right. Well, let's keep that in mind. Like you said, let's assume that they win some of the games, right, that we have remaining on the schedule, and finish 5, 6, or 7, right? Like, let's say that's the seed range. I know we had the whole 5-12 last year and got our butts kicked by Ja Morant. Understood. But, like, especially when you look at, like, once you get past the top 30, like, college basketball is just not good. And one can argue even the top 30 is, you know, kind of a little hit or miss, right?
There's so much parity. Like, there's so many teams that could really match up with anybody, but you think there's going to be a team that Marquette's going to face. Let's say they're a 6. I think a 5 right now is being optimistic because I think you got to win out to get that. So let's say Marquette's a 6. Let's say they go 3-1 down the stretch. They beat the bad teams. They lose to Seton Hall, which is probably the most likely scenario for these last 4 games. You're probably looking at a 6, and so teams trending around that 11 line are, according to Bracket Matrix, USC, Oklahoma, Utah State, Cincinnati, Providence, you're not going to play them in the first round, and NC State, and then East Tennessee State is an automatic, projected automatic bid, then you're getting to other projected automatics. So, like, none of those teams, to my knowledge, have a Ja Morant. Now, we've placed USC already. We saw how that went. That went quite well. Oklahoma's pretty young. Cincinnati is just okay. NC State, they beat the crap out of Duke the other night, but again, you would think those are teams Marquette could beat. Marquette will probably be favored against any one of those teams on a neutral floor. So, there's certainly a potential to get at least one tournament win. And if you're a 6 seed, you go out, you get smoked by a 3 seed in the next round, okay, that's the way it goes.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I'm still optimistic that they get at least one. I mean, depending on how the bracket breaks, I still think they can win two. I mean, the Big East is a tough conference. Like you said, if Providence is an 11 seed, quite frankly, that's really because of their garbage results in non-conference, right? Like, the results in Big East play have been solid. They've beaten Butler. They've beaten Villanova. They've beaten Creighton. They've beaten Seton Hall. Right? Those are high-quality teams. So losing...
Yeah, if you separate that into two resumes, you wouldn't believe it's the same
right,
team.
Exactly. You know, the team that beat Seton Hall pretty... You know, pretty handily, and or not pretty handily. They were up big and then let Seton Hall back in, but they still won and beat Creighton, lost to Long Beach. I mean, go figure that one out, right? But so like that, you know, Providence is kind of a false flag there at the 11 seed, but all of those 11, 12, you know, 10 seeds, I'm not terribly worried about them. And I mean, obviously Marquette's shown a capacity to lose to anyone, you know, but you still have to be optimistic there. But it does hinge on these next four games and winning the ones you should. And I guess kind of to pivot back to the games and kind of Paint Touches had an interesting kind of Twitter thread around, you know, lineups, and there's been some analytics around, you know, some of the best defensive lineups or best performing lineups for Marquette are ones that feature Jamal Cain and Jace Johnson and that, and, you know, and Paint Touches had a bit of a thread around changing lineups. Where's your head at? Would you, if you got teleported into Wojo's body, if we had a real Freaky Friday thing going on here, would you change?
Well, Wojo would first do a terrible job editing my show, but go on.
Well, I mean, why should he be any different at that job than this one? I mean, kidding a little bit. But would you change? would you like change who's getting max minutes? Would you reduce anyone that's getting a lot of minutes, like decrease their minutes in favor of others? I'm not even necessarily talking starting lineups. I'm talking about like who do you emphasize in this on this team right now?
I would like to see a little more of Jamal Cain. I would like to see Jamal Cain get some more minutes, because I think when he can just get some confidence and can just get the ball rolling a little bit, I think he can make a nice impact. I think when he just comes in for 2 minute stretches here or there, it's like he's hardly there. I just think because when he gets his outside shot going and he's a plus rebounder for his position. I think he's shown some positive signs. I would have a tighter leash on Kobe McEwen, I think. Of course, I would totally let Kobe loose in the last 5 minutes of a game because he's like Superman in the last 5 minutes of a game. But maybe, I don't know, maybe a little more for Greg Elliott there. Other than that, I don't know what else to do. There are only so many buttons you can push.
Right. I think I definitely want to get, especially the way Brendan's been playing of late. And again, I'm the same person that talked about that Brendan needs to be confident, and decreasing his minutes doesn't help his confidence. But the last couple of games, he's certainly, you know, there he had open looks against Creighton and just did not convert. And Cain seems to, I'm not a big proponent of the, well, if you give somebody a short leash, they're not going to perform, right? You got to let them play through. But Cain does seem to be that guy, right? Like he just needs 6, 7, 8 minutes in a row to really kind of like get into the flow and feel connected and start doing some good things. Because I think he overthinks initially and then he kind of settles in. If I'm playing armchair psychologist. So I think to answer my own question, I would definitely spend a little more minutes on Greg, Jamal, and Jace Johnson, I think. I mean, it's going to depend on the pick and roll, how much the opponents are playing pick and roll, because Theo's a better pick and roll defender, but Jace is a better rebounder and a better, I'll say, general defender. So I think those are the changes, but yeah, I'm in total agreement. And this is not me trying to bag on Kobe McEwen, but as much as practical, I would minimize his minutes. I just don't think he's contributing well to the team right now, and I really struggle to see, you know, why he's getting the amount of minutes he's getting.
Yeah, it's just I guess Wojo brought him in to be that guy alongside Marcus, and he's gonna ride or die with him. And like, the way Kobe is in the last 5 minutes of a game, if he played that for 40 minutes, he would be first team All American,
right?
Because he is just out of this world sometimes late in games. But it's, you know, the first 30, 35 where you're just like, man, just keeps kicking it around or throwing up bricks. Or
well, and even the announcer during the Providence game, and I don't remember what the announcing crew was, but like with 10 minutes to go in the game, he said, and he said it in such a nonchalant way, but I was like, he said something to the effect of, boy, Kobe McEwen is dribbling the ball a lot today. And I was like, exactly.
Wasn't it Gus?
Yeah, it may have been Gus Johns. Who's the play-by-play? It was whoever was the play-by-play guy. It wasn't Gus.
Oh, okay. Maybe I missed.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, it was a lot of you know, Kobe McEwen dribbling the ball around, and it resulted in a lot of turnovers. You know, it's just I'm not in the meeting rooms. I'm not in the practices. I'm not in whatever. Like, I'm barely qualified to be on a podcast that, you know, some people listen to. But I don't see what Wojo's seeing in Kobe McEwen right now and Brendan Bailey to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think it's almost like, you know, whatever his preseason interpretation of his team was, he's rolling with that. I mean, that's what he's going
with. Well, to your and point, he might reevaluate because he's got to pull some moves this season yet, right?
Yeah, and granted, in short spurts, aren't Greg Elliott's overall numbers a little better than McEwen's?
For sure.
I mean, his offensive rating is better. His three-point shooting percentage is better. Two-point percentage is better. Kobe's a great free-throw shooter. I'll just go clicking through the stats here. Kobe's assist rate's better.
Kobe's turnover offensive rating is better.
Or Greg's offensive rating is better.
Did I say Kobe? Yeah, I meant Greg.
Greg's. I mean, again, granted, limited minutes there for Greg, but I think in short spurts, Greg has been pretty good at times, and you know he can defend. I hate it for Kobe because I like what he brings sometimes, but sometimes you just want to nail him to the bench for a few minutes and just say, "Man, take a breath out there."
Well, and in fact, he said with two fouls early in that Providence game, Kobe sat for the whole rest of the first half, and there were a couple of moments there where Marquette looked like they were going to claw their way back in. In fact, there were two moments in that Providence game that really stuck out to me. I tend to agree with your statement earlier that Marquette probably wasn't going to come back in the game, but there was a moment in the first half when Kobe was on the bench where I think it was Bailey stole the ball, and Howard was streaking, you know, down the middle of the court. And Bailey couldn't, even though he's 6'7", couldn't throw it over the defender. Defender stole...
Just threw a line drive right at
it. Defender stole it right back, and it resulted in a three. And I think before that three, it was a six-point difference. So, you know, Howard presumably, with all the space in the world, hell, he could have pull up in transition jumper. What is it? Puget? The pull-up jumper in transition, right? He could have hit a three there, but let's say he gets a two. Yeah. Now Marquette's only down four with some significant momentum. Instead, they're down nine, which eventually goes to down 11. And then in the second half, Marquette was down, I want to say, seven or eight, had strung three stops in a row, presumably got the fourth, and then got called for... I don't know. I don't know how you... I don't know how you could call it a kickball, but I get it. Right, like it. Yeah, his foot was on the floor, and the ball bounced next to his foot. But whatever. But yeah, that kick ball then resulted in Providence getting the ball back. I think they got an alley oop out of the possession, and any momentum was gone. Right.
Yeah, the kick ball thing, like, I don't know how it's worded in the rule book, but it's like intended for when you stick your foot out to like deflect a pass.
Right.
And like that's a kick ball. But in a scramble situation, which is what that was, if the ball grazes off your foot, that doesn't seem like that's the correct interpretation of what the kick ball rule is intended for. The kick ball is for when you basically use your foot as a hand to deflect the ball defensively. You're not supposed to do that. But like again, the way I remember that play, it was just kind of a scramble.
Yep.
Drill, the ball was bouncing along the floor, and it may or may not have bounced right off his foot. And so they called that a kick ball and gave the ball back to Providence. When Marquette almost had possession. They didn't have possession, but they were just on the verge of grabbing that ball. And that, yeah, that was brutal, and that may have cost Marquette some momentum, but I can't blame the loss just on that. That call sucked, but it
yeah, and that's yeah, and that's why I hesitated to bring it up. I'm just saying that, like, Marquette had opportunities to get back in that game, and they happened to coincide, whether this is coincidence or not, it happened to coincide when Kobe was on the bench. So, yeah. Again, I like him as a player. I think he brings a lot of positive things. But whether it's a right now thing or just in general, I just don't think he's bringing a lot. I'm not saying bench him, but I would certainly favor Greg and Jamal, where possible, getting more minutes than Kobe.
Yeah, I could see that. I could agree with that. You know, coming into this week, Phil, we thought this was going to be the week when we were really hyping up the Seton Hall game. But, you know, just really talking about Marcus versus Miles and what a great matchup that is. Like, I almost don't care about it. Like, I just want to, like, see them beat Georgetown just to assure myself this team, you know, is going to get in the right mind as March approaches. Like, is that kind of what, like, granted, like, see, Saturday is going to be so emotional because it's going to be Marcus Howard's last home game. It's going to be still going to be a huge game on the schedule because you're playing Seton Hall, who's kind of become, I guess, a bit of a rival here in the last couple years. And all the smack talk between Seton Hall fans and Marquette fans, but Howard and Powell, and, you know, it still could be a deciding game in the Big East Player of the Year race, which could have effects on the first-team All-American decisions and the National Player of the Year race. But, like, I find myself just, I can't even focus on that game right now because I just want to see them win a game before then.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's, again, I feel like I'm the optimistic one, and, like, on paper, I'm always convinced that Marquette's going to pull out of this, or, you know, I can make excuses or justifications for why the results went the way they did and why the future results are going to be different. But I just mentally I have to put it shift into a I don't believe you can win until you show me you can win. You know, like, I just psychologically I think they're in a bad place, and I don't know why, right? Like, obviously I know why now because they've lost three in a row, but I don't know what psychologically has triggered that this team is having this struggle with these three games so far and what appears to be a winnable schedule, but very well may be too tough for them.
Yeah. But just, like, if we could try to look at the Seton Hall game for just a minute, like, do you have a gut feeling on that game, or do you want to see Wednesday first? Because that's where I would,
yeah,
like,
I want to see Wednesday. Like, I mean, if Marquette loses to Georgetown or wins in a tight one, like, I would immediately just assume a 10 to 17 point loss against Seton Hall.
Right. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same way. Like, if they lose to Georgetown, I am just 100% out on this team.
Yeah.
Like, just, I'm done with this year's team. If they lose to Georgetown, then there's no coming back. They're gonna get, if they lose to Georgetown, they will get blown out by Seton Hall on Saturday. Maybe get one more win between DePaul and St. John's. Limp Big East tournament, whatever. And then they'll just, I'll probably pick them to lose in their first round of the tournament, no matter who they're facing. I'll be totally out on this team if they lose Wednesday. If they can show me something on Wednesday, maybe you can talk me into them being competitive and waking up. And what I said, like, at the beginning of the season, when Seton Hall comes into your house, if that's a rival, that's a proving game. If you want to be one of the big boys, you got to win that game. And maybe I can get back in that mindset. But first, I've got to see something on Wednesday.
I agree. You're 100% where I am, generally speaking. But how's this for a prediction and just trying to, like, read the leaves in the Wojo era? You could absolutely convince me that Marquette is going to go 1-3 these last four games, and the one win is going to be against Seton Hall.
God, I could almost see that. Just losing to Georgetown first would just be so mentally crushing. Like, it would be so. That would be the least expected thing for me, for them to lose to Georgetown and then get up off the deck and beat Seton Hall on Saturday.
I'm just saying, in the Wojo era, yeah, like, for whatever reason, when you think everything is going well, it's a disaster. And when you think nothing could get worse, or when, like, when everything's bad, like, all of a sudden they pick themselves off the mat, right? Like, was it last year or 2 years ago where they desperately needed a Providence win? Or no, they beat Villanova when they were ranked number one, and you thought, all is well, we're good. And then a Providence team that was, what, seventh or eighth in the conference comes in and beats Marquette at home the next game, right? And then they lose to Georgetown a week later after a bye on the road, right? Like, that's just what this team is, seemingly, under Wojo, is they win when you don't think they will, and they lose when you absolutely think they shouldn't.
Yeah, what about it was 2 years ago, right, when they were when Marcus Howard left the game against Creighton on the road.
Yeah, and they were down like
it was Marcus Howard. Yeah, and so they played the rest of that game without Marcus Howard, and you're like, well, this is the season, it's over. And then they came back, won that game, rallied, actually had a nice finish that season. They won four out of their last five. Unfortunately, that one loss was to DePaul, and that pretty much eliminated them from any hope of making the tournament. But still, again, that was a situation where I thought the season was done, totally over. But then they gave me a little bit of glimmer of hope. They beat Creighton, they beat St. John's, and then they had that crushing loss to DePaul, and then it was over. But still, and like I think somebody was pointing, I think it was Ruby who was pointing that out on Twitter. It's like, there have been several high moments in Steve Wojciechowski's tenure, but they were almost always immediately followed by like losing two out of three or losing three out of four or just a stunning upset loss. Like you said, that Providence loss after beating Villanova at home. And then there was another loss to Providence that was earlier this season. And then they also lost to Providence after they beat number one Villanova.
Correct.
Three years ago. Yep. So, whatever direction they're trending, they seem to surprise you. But yeah, I'm just bracing myself for the most likely outcome this week, Phil. I'm on the record. You have to beat Georgetown. Don't lose that game and tell me everything's going to be fine, because I absolutely, Ron Burgundy meme, I don't believe you. I will not believe you. If you lose to Georgetown, don't even like try to sell it in post game that, yeah, everything's fine, we're going to get this right. No, you will not. But I'm going with the most likely scenario. They beat that undermanned, wounded Georgetown team, but still, I don't think they have enough to beat Seton Hall Saturday. So I'm going to say win-loss this week is where I'm going.
Yeah, I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to put this out here. Like, I understand frustration. I get it. Do not boo in that Georgetown game. At the beginning of the game.
Until it's over.
Listen, if Marquette loses that game, boo away, right? Like,
I'll be right there with you. I'll be booing from Texas.
Right. Like, absolutely. Like, get it out, especially get it out Wednesday, because do not boo on senior day. But
yeah. Regardless, yes, we do owe that to the seniors, especially our all-time leading scorer.
Right. So let's see where we go with Georgetown. It absolutely should be a win, and quite frankly, it should be a convincing win. Marquette is a better team than Georgetown, full stop. If they, you know, and I don't even care about like whether they have a poor shooting night or not. Like, Marquette should just be better than Georgetown. They've already beaten them on the road, and when Georgetown was at their new full strength, right after the transfers and whatnot. And right. if they're not at full strength, if they have, you know, six scholarship players, you're for sure better than them. So save it, you know, keep your powder dry. See where that Georgetown game goes. If Marquette wins convincingly, I think we got some hope for Seton Hall, right? Just based on emotion and where that
gets. If you could just like wash away the collapse fears, right?
Press the reset
button. Exactly. Just beat Georgetown and beat them comfortably. Everyone say, okay, maybe they're not collapsing. Now those jerks from Seton Hall are coming in. And it's Marcus Howard's senior day, and Sakar Anum's senior day, and Jace Johnson. But, you know, Marcus and Sakar have been there a combined 9 years.
Right.
So, like, you know, it's like, it's going to be a very emotional game. So I think if just beat Georgetown, you will just wash away the collapse fears, and everyone can hit reset for a couple days and get fired up for Seton Hall. And I think that could be an amazing atmosphere on Saturday. And, yeah, they could get a win, but I just need to again, I need to be cleansed of this fear of a collapse. Yes. And so please do that on Wednesday.
Yes, I agree. That's absolutely. You've got to take that. Like, even a tight win, like by 2 or 3 points, feels like just reinforcing this psychological, you know, like condition or whatever, right? Because if you beat Georgetown convincingly and set yourself up for a good shot at Seton Hall, again, Georgetown or DePaul and St. John's are you know, weak points for us mentally for whatever reason, especially on the road. But that still shapes up of you, if you can beat Seton Hall, you should beat Georgetown, St. John's, and DePaul. Going 4-0 to end the season, finishing up 11-7 in conference is a big deal. I mean, that's I haven't run the scenarios, but that feels like a guaranteed fourth place finish, if not potentially a little bit better. So,
yeah, I think there's a I don't think they're not going to be able to catch the top three,
no.
But I don't think that can happen. But without some very shocking
help.
Results,
yeah, significant help, yeah, for sure. But yeah, so can it happen? No. But, like, it's still a strong finish, but it starts with that Georgetown game. You have to win that because I'm with you, though. If Marquette loses to Georgetown or even tight, I don't know that they win the last 30. Any of the last 30.
Yeah. If they get a tight win over Georgetown, I'll say maybe they at least can shake it off and still scratch out some wins on the road. But, yeah, if they lose, just play terribly, yeah, then I'm ready to shut it all down.
Yeah. Yep, I'm with you.
All right. So let's hope for some positive things. But again, brace yourself for the worst and hope for the best. It's just basically my philosophy on life in general. So we welcome your feedback. Where do you feel on the collapse? You can hit me up on Twitter. I'm JoeMcCann3. Phil is MOOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. You can read Phil's article if you haven't read it yet, his kind of big theory on Wojo. Of course, we have several other articles there. Alan's been writing a bunch about Marcus Howard, the National Player of the Year, which may or may not still be relevant as the week goes along. Again, we post the podcast on cracksidewalks.com. You can leave your comments there. We also have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. You can do that as well. By the way, Phil, I have one little promotional thing that may be of note before we get out of here.
Please.
You know, my day job is I produce this show called Sports Stars of Tomorrow, which is on high school athletes. A gentleman named Dawson Garcia is going to be on the show this week.
Oh!
It's actually... All right. I can undersell it a little bit. It's a very short interview because I just got him at an AAU tournament. Back in the summer. That's kind of the way my show works, is we collect a lot of interviews over the summer and then we spread them out throughout the year. So he doesn't say anything about Marquette because he was not committed to Marquette at the time I interviewed him, but there will be a short piece on Dawson Garcia in the next episode of Sports Stars of Tomorrow. So if you're so inclined, if you can find that on your local station, tune that in. He'll be on there.
Get them clicks. Is there any way anyone can watch Sports Star of Tomorrow on a streaming?
I believe that not streaming, I don't believe. I mean, it'll be on the website. The story will be posted on the website by the weekend. So just go to sportsstarsoftomorrow.tv and it'll be posted there by the weekend. But I think I want to say, I should have written this down, but I want to say in Milwaukee we air on WMLW on Saturday mornings. I want to say 10 a.m.
I believe that is correct, yes.
So, off the top of my head.
So that's channel 36 if you're in Milwaukee.
Yes, I forget the exact time, but... yeah, it's we are Saturday mornings on that station. If you want to catch that episode, and then yeah, it'll be on the website after if you miss it. So Dawson Garcia this week on Sports Stars Tomorrow, but be sure to go to Cracked Sidewalks, crackedsidewalks.com as well to read all the content we have posted there. Anything else, Phil, before we get out of here?
No, please, God, don't let us lose to Georgetown.
Don't lose to Georgetown. Don't lose to DePaul. It's now turned into don't lose to Georgetown.
Here's where we are.
Please. That's where we are. Seashells and balloons, everybody.